Good afternoon, everyone. I suggest we start. It's 2:30. An hour is very short to explain how to build a great metro application, because it takes a lot to build a great application. First of all, introducing myself, I'm Leslie Cottenier. I'm a UX designer at the company Pureplexity. We're a digital agency building applications for web, mobile, and touch. And UX is, of course, a very large part of our process, of our development cycle. I'm going to discuss four large topics today. First of all, I'm going to elaborate a little bit further on what is UX, what is user experience, why is it so important. I'm going to talk about Metro in general and the Metro design principles and why I think it already is great UX. I'm going to talk about design for touch, because Windows 8 is, of course, mainly a touch user interface, designed for tablets and also laptops, of course. But there's a large touch orientation there. And then I'll give you a few pointers on how to create a great application and what it takes in the process before development, what you have to do to actually make sure that your application is great and that users like to use it, because that's, of course, the most important thing, your user. First of all, what is UX? What is user experience? A lot of people use the word because it's, well, today, and I'm really happy about it, but it's a buzzword. People tend to use it in many contexts, sometimes even the wrong context. But user experience is actually a collection of a wide variety of things that you can do. But more importantly, UX is actually all around us. It's not only a part of software development, of application development. It's all around us in the everyday things that we use. Because the word actually says it itself, the user experience. So whether you're talking about a bottle of Coca-Cola or an application, it's basically the same thing. It's about the experience the user has using a certain object, using a certain application. And because it's always more interesting and more efficient to talk about user experience with examples of the everyday life, I'm going to do it the same thing here as well. UX is, and that is the most basic explanation for it, it's about not making people feel like monkeys. Think about several situations where people don't really know what to do and they look at it stupefied. For example, have you ever felt like a monkey when you're at the gas station? I do. because you have like two screens, and the two screens both communicate with you. The first one you have to use a touch screen, the second one has the numbers that you have to type in, and both of them are shouting actions to you, so you don't really know what to do sometimes. And sometimes I just sit myself at a gas station and look at how people try, you know, to get their car to work and trying to pick the right tank. So that's one of the best examples that I have of a very bad user experience. So it's all around us. But it's not only about making people not feel like monkeys. Sometimes it's even about something a little more important. Sometimes it's also about saving lives. And I think the life-saving example is the best way of explaining why user experience is so important. And even NASA had to learn it the hard way. A couple of weeks ago, there was a documentary on National Geographic, Air Crash Investigation. I really shouldn't watch it because it makes me really edgy to go on an airplane, but I think it's very interesting. And it was a story about two planes that collided over San Diego. And when even NASA, because NASA is controlling the radar systems in the US air control towers, and also the airline industry, started an investigation. Why did these two planes collide? I mean, it's basically not possible. Still, it was possible, and they learned that their software, the radar software, was not user-friendly. So what happened? When a plane has a certain altitude, it appears on the screen, and apparently, these are the rules, planes should always be on different levels when they enter the airway of how do you say it? Airport, right. So they have to change their altitude. But there are rules to it. A pilot can't change its altitude unless the tower control gives them the command, now you can change your altitude. Now in the command tower, there's software. the person who was sitting behind it was checking the screen, doing his job the way he thinks he should do his job, and he sees on the screen, with one little number changing, that the plane changed altitude. So he said, okay, that plane has already changed altitudes, so I don't really have to say anything to them anymore. And that's where the error occurred, because it just changed without a notification, without any kind of visual impact saying, you know, this plane should change altitude. And the guy in the tower thought that he changed the altitude, and the guy in the plane, he said, okay, they're not commanding me in anything, so I'm just going to stay in the same lane. And of course, the devastating result of it is that the two planes crashed into each other, and there were more than 100 lives lost. And afterwards, when they saw this, they you know, decided to change the radar system and to make it a little more user-friendly. Of course, I'm not saying that everyone here is going to build software that's going to save lives. On the other hand, if a person gets way too frustrated by using your software, maybe they'll plunge out of the building. I don't know. Just make sure that the people you're using or developing your software for are happy, and that they know what the software is for, and that they don't, you know, make these kinds of errors like the San Diego plane accident. So what is user experience design? When we actually look at software or application development, it's a wide range of techniques. It's information architecture, it's human-computer interaction, how do humans interact with computers, with each other. It's about interface design, it has to look nice, people like nice things. It's the interaction design, so the interaction with your interface. It's usability. It has to be user-friendly. If people have to take a manual of 100 pages before they can start using your application, then you haven't done a very good job. And it's also about human factors engineering, which is simply, you know, research into how users, humans, actually behave in certain situations and how we can adapt our software to it. So there's a lot going on, even before you write one letter of code. And these are all things that you have to take into account. Of course, if you're working in a development agency and a customer is paying for the software, then I can imagine that they won't have the budget to pay for all of this. But it's, if you are aware of the fact that this exists and you are aware of a few of the basic principles, then you can already build a very good app without having to put a lot of budget in this entire user experience cycle. So today, I can imagine if you start building software or an application or a website or a mobile app, it doesn't really matter. You start by drawing some lines. You start by building the navigation with the boxes, with a delete button. You know, you start by building your interface. And then you end up with a website looking like this, which looks on the first hand very nice, but you don't really know what's it about. Is it news? Is it video? I see a store up there. I don't think they will sell too much because it's hidden away in the corner. There's so much going on this website that people don't really know what to do with it. And this is a perfect example of, you know, just diving into the development of a website, and then along the way you think, oh, it would be nice to have this. Let's put it on there as well. Oh, it would be nice to have a shop. Oh, well, we have a little bit of space up there in the corner top. Let's put a shop link in there. So that's not a very well thought of design. It's not thought of in the perspective of a user, in the perspective of why would a user come to my website? What is a user going to do on my website? This has been developed in the viewpoint of developer or the marketing manager or whoever is responsible for this website, saying, oh, we can add this feature and that feature, and we'll just add everything that a user could possibly need, and then he'll find his way around. And of course, after 2 weeks, the user will probably find his way around, but the user is not that patient, and the user is not that forgiving. Also, if you think about it, in the app stores, well, not in the market, but if you look at the Apple App Store, how many apps are in there? Choice is very large, so people do not have the patience to learn how to use your app. They will look at it, they will try it for 5 seconds, and then they will or dismiss it or leave it there and use it. They're very harsh. So you have to take that into consideration. Now, what makes an app great? In summary, and this is basically the only thing that you have to remember from today, almost, an app has to be easy to use. That's simple. It has to be fun to see, so the design needs to be okay. It needs to be easy to learn. And it needs to help the user solve a problem. I'm not talking about global problems or anything like that. I'm just talking about it needs to be useful to the user. It needs to solve a problem. It needs to inform a user. He needs to have an ability, a utility to use the application. One thing I also want to say about the easy to learn part, often when I say this, an application has to be easy to learn, I get the feedback, you know, that's not true because my users, they're engineers and they're very technical and they will know how to use it. It doesn't matter how technical your user is or how experienced he is in a certain domain. Any person just wants to do his job and his job only. He does not first want to have to look into the interface and you know, finding his way. He just wants to do his job. And it's not because someone is a technical engineer that you have to throw the numbers into his face. It has to be easy to learn and easy to use and fun to see, and it needs to help the user do something. Now, I've been doing user experience for quite some time now, and when Metro came into life, I was really excited because also with the guidelines and the ambition that Microsoft has in developing a great consistent ecosystem with all apps, you know, kind of all in the same navigation pattern, the same design principles, it's going to be so great for the users. But even better, it's going to make sure that developers or anyone without experience with interfaces leave no excuse whatsoever to create a shitty app. Because the user experience guidelines for Metro and Metro as such is really easy. So there are no excuses anymore that I come across an application that is so dreadful that it shouldn't have even been published in the market. So yeah, I'm psyched. Now, you probably already heard this story, but this is for me, that's a great philosophy in Metro and how they came up, actually, with the whole Metro design and the slick lines and the nice typography and the big numbers. It's actually simply wayfinding in a Metro station or in a train station. And that's actually great thinking because if you're on a train and you need to take the next train within 10 minutes or else you have to wait for another 50 minutes because you missed the train because you didn't find the platform. So wayfinding signalization in a train station and a Metro station have to be very user-friendly and have to be very clear. And what you see in these boards of signalization is only the information that matters at the moment that a user is, or a person, a traveler, is in front of it. It only sees what he needs to know at that moment. He needs to know this is platform A and that's platform 11. This is arrival, departure, only those things he sees. No designish kind of things, no distractions, just I'm here, that's what I need, and that's what I'm getting. And that is basically the philosophy of Metro design. Another example, and this is probably why they've called it Metro. So there, anyone can ride a Metro in New York. Brussels is a different story, but they have some UX issues there as well. But in New York, apparently, you can ride the Metro even if you haven't ever been there, which is, of course, very good. Now, if we look at Metro-style design, there are five principles that we have to take into account. And if we live by these five principles, then we can create a great application. Even if we're not a designer, even if we have no knowledge whatsoever about interface design. Five principles, very easy. The first one is do more with less. The second one, pride in craftsmanship, be fast and fluid, authentically digital, win as one. These are very marketing speak-like principles, so we'll get into a little bit more detail and we'll, you know, make it a little bit more practical because they are very practical, although it sounds very crafted by marketing people. You know, the whole do more with less is actually the same thing that, as I've told you just now, in the train station and the Metro way. Content before Chrome is basically about providing or giving the user what he needs at that moment and no distractions from anything else, just what he needs at that moment. So it's content. And content is the heart of an application. Why do people go to an application? Why do they use it? If it's a news application, for the content. If it's a utility application, for the functionalities. Functionality, to me, it's also content, because that's what the application is about the user doing something, not about creating a whole navigation pattern and buttons and whatever. It's just basically that. So that's what I've just said. And if you look at a Metro application, you see that there is nothing there but the content, which is also a challenge at this point, because we're also used to these navigation patterns. We're used to the top menus and then the vertical menus, and we're used to the buttons, and now they're not there anymore. So we need a new way of actually starting to create an application. And we need to start with the content. We need to start by thinking, what is relevant to my user? And how can we make sure that he doesn't get distracted from other things aside from what he needs to be able to do? This is an example of a Metro-style application. So as you can see, it only has pictures, it has titles, it has categories. So basically, from the first impression of the application, you know what it's about. It's actually an RSS reader. And as you can all think of an RSS reader at this point, as you know of today, it's all these lines. And you have to read a lot before you actually find something that's interesting for you to read. So what Metro is actually doing, it's not only providing you with the content, it's visualizing the content to you, so that in one split second, you see what you find interesting and you see something that you want to read or do. Now, if we think about taking pride in craftsmanship, what does that mean? It basically means that you need to be proud of what you're creating and that you need to create it with perfection. An application, and definitely a Metro application, because there's no navigation elements and there are no visual adornments to make it look nice, because I think visual adornments in many cases actually hides the fact that the user experience and usability is not very good. And in Metro style design, you don't have that anymore, so you have to make sure that the things that you do display on your application, that they are just perfect. And one way that Metro is doing this is providing you with a set of fonts, because typography is a very strong way of presenting something in a very beautiful way. In typography, you know, if you look at the newspapers, just by having different font sizes, you know the difference between texts, titles, headlines, and that's just with text. It's not like in a website, a box on top of the title that says title, main title. It's just the typography itself that gives you that information. And that is the same thing that they want to do with Metro design. So these are the typography of Metro design, and it's very easy. You don't have to think about it for yourself. You just go to the Metro guidelines, and there you will find it. That 42 points is page headers, then you have the subheaders, you have the body copy, and you have tertiary information. So they're giving you a lot of things to make sure that you create your application the way it should be. There's a whole philosophy behind the choice of Segue as font. I'm not going to enlighten you with it because I forgot, but it's a very good one. Another trait of pride and craftsmanship is Metro design, like I said, is without navigation, but you need to find a way to visualize when content belongs together, when commands belong together. You need to have a certain way of navigation. I mean, people need to know what they're plunging into. And that's why we're actually going back to grid-based design. And grid-based design is very easy. You can see it right here. And how do we make sure that people visually see that blocks of text or that blocks of content functionality belong together is to just put them visually together. And then you create a little bit more space between the next chunk of text on blocks of content. So it actually shows you that you don't need navigation. I mean, people aren't stupid, really. You could say on top of that, this is this and this is that, and if you want to go there, you click here, you just see it visually, bang, it's there. Here we see another time an example. So here we see design milk. It's a category, it's an example. But you see that these items belong together. There's a big gap, and then you see the next few items. So it's very easy. Also very an important, and this is a part of the consistency in the entire ecosystem of Mitru applications, and this is what I really love about it, because it's going to be so easy for the user, is that all applications will follow the same structure. They will follow the same way of presenting the content in an application. And if you look at it, all applications follow the same grid lines. And that will make sure that people, when they open a new application, your application, they will instantly know that there in the corner they will find the title, that below they will find the subheaders, and they will know where to find all kinds of stuff. And that also gives them confidence. If your app is a little bit more difficult, it will give them confidence to go and explore the application themselves. And even greater is the fact that it's all touch-based, so they just have to touch the screen and they will start to explore your application and learn by doing. If your application, or 10,000 of applications, and that's what you see in the app stores of Android and Apple today, is that people have started to experiment with navigations, and that makes sure that especially marketing applications are very hard to use, because they go from one way to from one side to another, then you're ending up somewhere and you don't know how to go back. This is something that will not happen if you follow these guidelines, because people will know how to use your application because they've used 10, 20 or 30 applications before, so they're confident. Now, another one of the principles was be fast and fluid. And I think if you have a Windows Phone 7, I think the same thing goes for Windows Phone 7. I had many smartphones. Every 3 months I needed another one. I'm very impatient and I like change. But when I bought the Windows Phone 7, it's been over a year that I have it now. And the very good, eh? But the reason that I still have it is because everything is crafted so well. It's because of the same, and many of the principles in Mitru are also used in the Windows Phone interface, is the fact that the animations have a purpose, is the fact that everything is very subtle, and that everything follows the same lines. And this is also the same case for the Mitru design, the motion. But what we don't want, because if you would do this talk for Flash designers, and you're talking about motion and animation, they start seeing fishes flying across your screen, or flowers growing, you know, to make the users happy. But it's not about animations for the sake of animation. It's an animation to make a visual statement, to give visual feedback to your user. For example, if you touch a screen, and you see it all the time in malls, there's a touch screen there, and it doesn't work. But you see people like, and they're very consistent, and they keep on pushing it, but it doesn't work. Because they've just, you know, pushed something that doesn't have a touch behind it. And this is one of the visual feedback in an animation that you have. If you touch a tile, it goes in. It's like a pillow. If you touch a pillow, it will go in a little bit. And that is a way of saying, this is touchable, this is something that we can do. It's not so difficult. There's an animation library. If you just follow that library, you will get your animations up and running in no time. So for example, the charms and also the app bar, you swipe it up, so everything is very fluid. Nothing is bang in there in your face. Also, the keyboard is also an example. Another way of being fast and fluid is the horizontal panning. And that's something that many people have difficulty with, because we're used to vertical panning on our phones, on our iPads. If you have a Twitter application, and many people are probably Twittering as we speak, and it's all vertical, whereas Mitru is all very horizontal, which is actually a good thing, but you have to, you know, be acquainted with it. And how do you make people know that there's more to come? is just by, you know, letting flow the content of the edge so that they, you know, instantly feel intuitively, ah, I can pan alongside the horizontal axis. But there's one thing that is, and I know a lot of people are stubborn and they want to do vertical scrolling, but it's not allowed. And why isn't it allowed? Again, part of the story of consistency. If you will start doing horizontal scrolling and vertical scrolling, and you have to know that to delete an application or to go out of the application, you swipe down as well. So if you're going to add vertical scrolling and you can swipe down also to remove the application, then you can see the errors already arriving. So vertical scrolling in an application is not done unless the snap view, because snap viewing is done vertically, but that has another reason, which I'll come to in a minute. Now, you know, being authentically digital, that's a difficult one to explain. You see in many applications, especially on iPad, I have an iPad, that's why I refer to it so often. Applications in, for example, Sea Life, or and you get an application with all kinds of water, and that's all very nice, but everybody knows the water isn't real. The same thing, for example, for a wood manufacturer. He wants an application, and let's make the background wood. That's not real wood, and we all know it. So why do we spend so much time in recreating real-life stuff when we know it's not real anyway? So that's what they mean by embrace the fact that it's just pixels on a screen, and don't even try to recreate water or wood or whatever natural thing that's out there, because it's only distractions. So when we just start to focus on the fact that wood isn't digital, that water isn't digital, we can start creating interfaces, we can start creating applications, again, that has no distractions. That's just, you know, with nice areas and nice colors, text, the typography once more, and pictures, because pictures say more than 1,000 words. An example of it is the file picker. I mean, there's not so much that you can do or see. There's no distraction. The background is a very nice blue or purple color. So you know what you can do here. You go to it, you know that you can select a file, maybe upload one. So that's all very clear. And that's what they mean by, you know, taking away all the distraction. Here it's very clear. This is a file application. How do you see that? There's files on the screen. And then you can do stuff with these files. So here we're not trying to recreate a photo album or something, which often does happen. The last principle is a very powerful one, the win as one principle, which is basically embracing the fact that your application could be part of a larger community. It's not about you anymore. It's never been about you. You just didn't know it yet. It's about the user. And the user, for example, he's trying to find a house, and he's got 5 applications to find a house, and he tries each and one of them every day, 2 times a day, if he's really obsessed, 3 times a day, which is very, I mean, it's tiresome. You put up one application, you give in your filters, you start searching, couldn't find anything, try the next one. If you build an application like ImuApp, for example, if someone's candidate to build a Windows 8 application for it, contact them because they need it, is actually making sure that if people are going to search for houses in your application, that you leverage it to the Windows 8 itself. And that's what you do with the contracts. I'll put it up here. So there's a couple of contracts, but the for me the most important one, well, there's 2, share and the search, is the search one. They don't even have to start up your application to find your content. And that's what it's about. It's not about the application itself, it's about the content in it and about getting the content to the user. And if you can make that happen, then you have a successful application, because if they find your content, they have to go to your application anyway, because they need to read more about that house and contact the real estate agent and so on. So if you make sure that you leverage all of your content with the contracts to Windows 8 ecosystem, then you've got a great story. Because then you're finding a house and you've got the 5 applications, that you had on iPad, but that now they've left iPad and now they're going to Windows 8. You just search from your Windows 8 hub, from your desktop, you search house in, let's say, Mechelen, and then you find all of the information from all five of the applications. Now, you still have people who are very, you know, they can't go to another application, they have to go to mine. It's not about yours anymore, it's about the content, and if your content is good, then they will go to your application. So it actually obliges you to create very good content. So that's a good story for me. Another great contract is the share. Every website, every application, they all have share options. Sharing to Facebook, sharing by email, Twitter, everything is shareable these days. Even things that I don't think are share-worthy, but anyway, everything is shareable. But we always, you know, we keep putting it in there, and that's actually wasted space. Because if you think back to, you know, the pride in craftsmanship, it's also about making sure that you use all your space in a very efficient way. And if all applications have a share on Twitter and a share on Facebook, why not just leverage it to the charms and getting it out of your application, which gives you more room to do something else. And this way, they just go to the share, and then whatever sharing kind of app that they have installed on their Windows 8, they can share your content through all of their social sites and whatever. So that's very important to think about it, and to you know, to really look into it, because it is very powerful. Now, aside from the five principles, we need an architecture, of course. You know, I can say a whole day long that you don't need navigation. You need some kind of path that you lay out for the users. And buildings aren't built without architects. Well, sometimes they are, but they collapse. And that's the same goes for applications, not only Windows 8 applications, every kind of application. In Windows 8, there's two kinds of patterns, which is very good news, because people get used to it very easy. Again, the consistency story. The first one is actually the one that's going to be used most of the time with most of the heavy content applications with a lot of categories and content to find your way through. It's actually the hierarchical pattern. So then you have your content area, your sections, your headers, your header menu, and the semantic zoom. Semantic zoom, by the way, is a very powerful, and it's a visual, very nice thing, I think. If you have indeed an application with a lot of content, and even your hub, they have to pan for a kilometer before they reach the end, then it's a very good way, just pinch, and you get an overview, a very nice overview of everything that is in your application. But anyway, about the hierarchical pattern, there's actually three levels. I got the feedback before that three levels is not enough. For many applications, especially business applications. But you don't have to confine yourself to just three levels. You can use two section pages and three detail pages. Just make sure that people still know where they are when you do that. So you have your hub page. If we're going to relate to a website, your hub page is basically your home page. And on your hub page, it needs to be very clear what the app is standing for, what you can find there, what you can do. Then you have the section page that would be like clicking on a website on a category. Let's say that we're browsing an. Let's say that we're browsing a website and we're going to some category like the VRT and we're going to economics. Then the section page would be the economics section of your Mitra application. And then your detail page would be within the section page. We see an article in the section page about some economical subject, and then you go to your detail, and then you get everything there. There's one thing missing from each and every of the applications that I've showed you, and that's like, how do you do stuff? How do I delete that article, for example? We'll get to that in a minute. So this navigation pattern for very large collections, multiple sections, or categories. This is an example of a hub for a travel application. If you click on the section title in the hub, then you go to your section. If you click in the last minute deal, for example, on the boat, then you go to the last minute deal of this boat. You can also, and this is the great thing about Metro, is that you don't have to go through all of these steps. If you see on the homepage instantly that boat trip that you like so much, you can directly go from the hub to the detail page. So this is the basic layout. Of course, you can, you know, move away a little bit from it, but I think it's a very good way of holding on to a user-friendly application if you're not that experienced in interface design. Then the second one, my title fell off, is the flat navigation. It says it itself, flat navigation, just has a content area, has a navigation bar on top, has sections, an add button and a delete button, and that's it. And that's for very basic applications that don't really have a lot of things going for them. For example, Internet Explorer in Windows 8 today chooses a flat navigation, but it's only for if you, for example, have a document application or multiple tabs, then you can use this. You can maybe try to combine them, both the flat navigation pattern and the hierarchical pattern, but do so with care so that people don't get lost again. So in all of the examples that I've shown, there was no way of, you know, there were no deletes, no things to do on the application. That's because everything that is navigation, that is Chrome, is taken out of the content itself and has been brought back down to the app bar or to the charms if it's something that you want to leverage into your entire Windows 8 system. Now, the app bars are very important because that's where the stuff to do is, and if you can't do anything in an application, once again, it's not very user-friendly. So if you're building your app bars, really think about the context. Really think about if you're putting a command in the app bar, does this have anything to do with the page that people are on at this point? Also keep the command sets in consistent positions throughout the application, because it's possible that on the hub page you don't have that much commands as you would have on a detail page, but some commands will stay on every level, so what do you do then? And what you often see is that, for example, you see there the far left button, and the next page they add another button, and then they move the in button to another place, and that's confusing for users, because then every time they would have to, you know, scroll through the whole app bar just to get the command that they needed. So if you keep them consistent throughout the entire application, it becomes child play. Also separate distinct sets using the edges or separators. So that's probably one of the only navigation or Chrome items that you can use. It's an actual separator to separate sets of commands. For example, if you have a content application and you have a filter command and you also have a sort command, then you can, you know, separate the two by adding a separator. Some very easy conventions, but there's debate about it, that new, add, create, start, compose, you put them on the far right. Commands that show only on selection, you put them on the other side. But it's sometimes a fine line. That's why I suggest if you create your app bars, and if you create an information architecture, try to storyboard it and create a storyboard for your application so that you have an actual page, and it doesn't really have to be drawn, you know, just a few lines, so that as long as you know what it's about, because that's for the paper bin anyway, but as long as you know what it's about, and lay out all of your pages and then add the app bars to it. And really think very carefully, what do people have to do when they're here on this page? And then you will get a very consistent way of presenting your commands to the user. Now, something very important is designing for touch, because Windows 8 will be mainly a tablet thing, well, a tablet that you can do much more with than other tablets that exist, is the touch. Windows as we know it is mouse, keyboard. Windows in a Metro-style design is mainly touch. Again, if you're designing for touch, don't make people feel like monkeys. Because there's nothing more dreadful. We're building applications for a museum today, actually a museum here in Mechelen. And you know, it's a public place, so people are already a little bit shy of doing something, and it needs to be very clear and very evident that they can touch the screen. And when they do touch the screen, something needs to happen, because if nothing happens, they will feel like monkeys. And then they will look around, you know, I didn't touch that, and then they will move on, and they will never touch a screen again. So you need to make sure that you know, you give users confidence in touching your application so that they can actually browse through it with confidence. There's a few guidelines to touch as well. And it's very important that, especially in the Windows 8 ecosystem, that you follow these touch events and that you only stick to them. Because if everyone will start to add or creating their own touch or creating their own interactions, then once again, it'll be very confusing to the user. And it already is very confusing. It's like the whole browser war from before. You know, I worked in Firefox or Internet Explorer, and things didn't work in one or the other. Same thing goes for touch. If you look at the iPad, there's different interactions there. If you have a MacBook or a MacBook Air, you know, the touchpad has also different interactions. So you have to learn again and again if you're using a new system. But if you, within your own system, can make sure that all applications use the same touch language, then people will learn it very easily, and they will be very confident in using the application. Whether it's yours or from your colleague or your competitor, doesn't matter. They will feel confident. You can find these touch language stuff on the Microsoft website. Another thing to keep in mind is the ergonomics. It's very, very weird, but an iPad is mainly held vertically. And what we're seeing now is that the slates that are already available with Windows 8 is being held horizontally, because, of course, the interface for Metro is also horizontal. But there are many ways you can, you know, hold your tablet and work on it. One is actually holding it vertically, so we have to make sure that your application can turn. You can hold it with two hands and then, you know, do everything with your two thumbs. You can lay it on your lap, or you can just, you know, be lazy and watch TV or whatever. So there are many scenarios in which you can use your tablet, and that is also something that you need to take into account if you're designing a touch interface. First of all, and that's a problem with many infrared touch screens, is that you need to be able to allow any number of fingers, because very easily you swipe with your pink without even knowing it, and you don't want anything to happen then, because it's something that the user didn't really want to do, it just, you know, happened. So you need to be able to allow any number of fingers when they're using it, and the same thing needs to happen when they're using whatever fingers that they like. Also very important is to keep interactions untimed, because timed interactions will make errors appear. Because if you develop it so that an interaction is too fast, then you will get accidental actions that people didn't really want to achieve, but they happen anyway because you've timed it. Too slow, it becomes inefficient. People think it's slow, and they will stop using it as well. So the best thing to do is just, you know, don't time gestures, just use a touch language. Swipe to select, for example, direct manipulation, drag and drop. You don't need to time it, you just leave it up to the people to do what they need to do with your application. And also, this is what I said before, is that you need to provide feedback on touchdown. So when they touch the screen, they need immediate feedback that something is going to happen or not going to happen. Another note with visual feedback and timed interactions, that is, and that's something that's been done very much in the Windows Phone 7, is that if you press and hold, that you get, you know, a certain action to do. A lot of people don't know that you can touch and hold. So if you do touch and hold for very heavy users, that's fine. But make sure that every action is doable without doing the touch and hold, because these are interactions that people don't see and often don't even know that they exist. Also, keep in mind that there are many people on this planet, and they all have different fingers. So if you are designing for touch, make sure that everybody can touch the object that you wanted people to touch, because sometimes objects are too close together for somebody with a very thick finger. And I know you can't design for a million people, but you can do averages. Or you can make sure that that beneath the object that you can actually see, that the touch area is a little bit larger. This is very technical, but for a person using the application, it's very important, and the person with thick fingers shouldn't be embarrassed about it, having thick fingers, because he can't use the application. It's the same with the touch keyboard, not only on Windows 8, but also on Windows Phone 7 and iPhone and whatever. They're all very close together, and still you always manage to take the right letter. And that's because, it's also because they've done some intelligence to it, but also because the area around it is also touchable. But it's, okay, it's touch first, but we still love mouse, keyboard, and pen, especially you guys, I can imagine. Many people that I've seen already building a Windows 8 application are building it on their laptops using their mouse and keyboard, which is fine, because I do think it's going to be the two will live together for a very long time. You can't do everything with touch. Just think about Office or Excel, Word, whatever. You can't do everything with touch. So you need to make sure that if you're building an application, that you test it with both, that you test it with mouse and keyboard, but also that you test it on a touch interface. So first of all, the mouse should work as expected, which is logical. It should work as it has been working for 20 years now. We don't have to start inventing new interactions for the mouse. We know it, we live by it, and we're very comfortable with the mouse. And we have to make sure that all functionality is accessible with the mouse. So it's not so that we'll allow a certain set of functionality only with our fingers and another set only with the mouse. It needs to work with both. So a very small summary. Like I said, it will work together. Use the touch patterns like direct manipulation, visual feedback, the targeting, the semantic zoom, which I talked about. And everything also needs to work with the mouse, keyboard, and a pen. And it will always have to work like that, I think, for many years to come. That's all about, Metro-style applications. But basically, anything that I've told applies to all kinds of applications. So if you're here, to listen to how to build a Metro application or a Windows 8 application, it applies to everything. And the more I read about Metro and about the guidelines, the more I actually apply them to our other applications as well. Whether they're web applications or desktop application, we're starting to apply them. I'm not saying that every application should be just content blocks, but, the five principles, if you apply them, you get really great-looking applications. But here's two more slides just to give you a little heads up on how to do it. Now, I really want you guys to go out here and just remembering from this session that you don't have to make people feel like monkeys, and try to think like a user. Because we're all users, and that's what amazes me sometimes. If you're talking to developers and they've created something, and they think it looks nice, and then I wonder, if you're taking a teapot and you can't pour the tea, then it's not a good teapot. And then they say, yeah, that's right. And then I'm like, okay, so why doesn't it apply to your application? So try to think like a user, because you are one. You're a user in everyday life with everyday things, and also with software. And you're pretty critical about software as well, so just apply it yourself so that you don't feel like a monkey, and your people or the users of your applications either. There's a few rules. I've talked about the user a lot, and I will continue to talk about users. I'm the syndicate of users. But you have to think user first. If you're building an application, for whatever, think about, okay, I'm building this application, why would a user or why would a person use it? And be very critical about it. Don't stuff it full of features because you think these features are very cool to program or they're very cool in general, but think about if you're building an application for house finding, why would you stuff it up full of things about cars? It's a very stupid example, but it fits. So when you've done that, you can decide on your content and functionality second, because the first thing that needs to come to mind is who am I going to build for? Second, what am I going to build? So decide on content and functionality second. Thirdly, lay out the information architecture carefully. You can do that by storyboarding. You can do that by creating tree structures, use cases, that's things you know. But it's very important that you know if a user goes from point A to point C, that he can go back to point A and not fall off the earth or something. So do that very carefully and do that, you know, in a 360 kind of view. So make sure that every page fits somewhere into that tree. And then fourthly, and that's the most difficult one for many people, sweat the details, sweat the design throughout the entire process. Details matter, and people will see these details. And that's the whole thing on authentically digital, pride and craftsmanship. So really be very critical for yourself and be just Mr. Perfect or Mrs. Perfect if there are women in the room. And then the last one, and this is a very good one, to start the exercise if you're going to build an application, is that you create a best ad statement for your user, which means that you actually make a promise to yourself and to your users, and that you promise that your app will be the best at its category. It's like I said before, there are many applications in all kinds of app stores, and there will be many applications in the Windows 8 stores, you will make sure of that. So make sure that yours is the best, and that people download yours and that they talk about yours, because with social media, but also in normal word of mouth, people talk. And they will talk when it's bad, but they'll also talk when it's good. So do that and stick to it at every decision. And every decision, if you're going to lay out the content, the functionality, the information architecture, if you're going to think about design, the commands, the charms, everything, stick to it at every decision. So you have to think about it really carefully before you plunge into the development yourself. And then, if you stick to it, then there's no excuse anymore to have a bad application.